too.
Is that a medal? Said Mark Malloy, tilting the photo frame towards the light. I thought it was a pacemaker.
Let me see, said Kathy. I want to see.
They've got different names, said Lady Darvish from the kitchen. The one on his chest is called a breast star, and the one on the sash is called a badge.
She reappeared with a fresh bottle of champagne and handed it to her husband to uncork.
A breast star, said Mark. Like in blue magazines? To cover up the naughty bits?
He stuck out his chest menacingly and covered his nipples with his fingertips.
Oh, Mark, said Kathy in pretend despair.
But Sir Owen Darwish was grinning.
Mate, he said as he peeled the foil from around the mouth of the bottle. You need to find a better class of magazine.
No one says blue anymore, said Kathy, making a face. Do they?
Sure they do. Blue movie?
No, they say porno. Or just porn.
Lady Darvish hadn't been following this exchange. He wears it on the left pocket, she went on. But if he dies and I survive him, then I get to wear it, only on the right.
Excuse me, said Sir Owen. Still alive? Hello?
She smiled at him across the candle flames.
I said if. I love knowing little rules like that, said Kathy.
Mark had thought of another joke. He pointed to the necktie Sir Owen was wearing in the photograph.
And what's that noose around your neck? What's that called?
Sir Owen popped the cork. They'd known the Malloys forever. Their children had grown up together. But it was the wives who had the friendship, and sometimes it fatigued him that he and Mark had no mode of dialogue except to break each other's balls. The women steered the conversation, volunteering information, rescuing the silences, fetching props, as Jill had done, rather embarrassingly, with the framed photograph of his investiture, and making plans to get together down the line. If the men interjected, it was either to grouse about expenses or to boast about some cunning savings they'd made. He was sure it hadn't always been like this, though perhaps it had. Perhaps he only noticed it now that they were empty nesters. But it seemed to him that every dinner party now followed the same pattern. In the early part of the evening, they were all competitively thrifty. Then, when they were drunk enough, they became competitively lewd.
Be honest, though, Mark was saying to Jill. Tell the truth. Does he think he's better than us now? Has it gone to his head?
God knows it's gone to mine, she replied with a laugh. I booked a flight the other day, and in the drop-down menu, you know, where it says your title, I was all lady, lady, lady. And then it wasn't even an option. I was so ripped off.
I heard her say fuck from the living room, Sir Owen said. She really shouted. I came running. I thought something terrible had happened. Is that how you let them know you're in the mood? Said Mark.
He cupped his hands around his mouth.
Fuck!
Mark, stop it, said Kathy,
flapping both her hands at him.
No, he's right, said Lady Darvish. It is what I do.
And they all laughed. When their laughter had subsided, Kathy said,
It's not very equal, though. You get to be Lady Darvish just on the back of—
Too right, said Sir Owen loudly,
grinning at his wife as he topped up her champagne flute.
Make your own bloody lunch.
No, but what I mean is, if it's a damehood, like if I became Dame Kathy, Mark wouldn't be Lord Malloy.
He wouldn't be Sir Mark?
No, I don't think he'd be anything.
Consort?
Escort. Oh, escort. Or gentleman, said Lady Darvish. Gentleman Malloy.
Maybe just man, said Mark.
He flexed his biceps.
Man Malloy.
I don't think he'd be anything, Kathy said again.
There was a pause. Mark's expression had tightened. Kathy either hadn't noticed or she didn't care. She sipped her champagne, and Mark looked down at his plate and began picking up crumbs with the pad of his finger. The Darvishes exchanged a glance. Mark was a contractor. He'd had a residential renovation business way back when, and had made good money doing it, until he had fallen from a scaffold and broken his back. He'd been in physio for months, and when he was finally well enough to return to work, he discovered that in his absence, his business partners had restructured the company, as he described it, to cut him out. After months of bitter disagreements and legal back and forth, he had finally given up and struck out on his own. But he'd met with a string of bad luck.
A client who refused to pay, a flood, a false insurance claim, and he'd had to shut up shop. Now he was working for a big construction firm as a gun for hire, and telling anybody who would listen what a rotten hand he'd been dealt. Mark was a catastrophizer, but even so, you had to feel a little sorry for the guy. Kathy had confessed to Jill that he was taking medication for depression, and it was clear the pills were making him gain weight. Maybe, thought Sir Owen, they were going through something. Lady Darvish had already changed the subject. She'd meant to tell them, she said, that she'd driven past their old house in Masterton the other day, and the new owners had knocked out the front fence and built a garage right smack in front of the lounge window. Had they seen it? Talk about lose a room to gain a room. It was such a shame. It didn't suit the property one bit. Mark muttered something about useless amateurs, and Kathy said, "Here we go." Because nothing got Mark going like people who thought they could learn a trade by watching videos on YouTube. And in seconds, Mark had perked up again and was telling a story that he told the Darvishes before. Jill was good like that. She could always find a way, with perfect, plausible deniability, of nursing someone's ego back to health. And as Sir Owen chose another truffle from the chocolate box, he reflected that if there was one thing these dinner parties really did have going for them, it was to remind him that he didn't envy other people's marriages one bit. His mind wandered over the chores he'd set himself to do that weekend. The Audi needed to be taken in for servicing. The LPG tank on the barbecue was dry. The kitchen knives could do with being sharpened. And he wanted to get up into the eaves and find out why the gutter guard kept popping out. Nothing particularly pressing, but he liked to be kept busy. They had bought the flat in Wellington, where they were now, purely as a pied-à-terre, and the place seemed much smaller now they were living there full-time. Jill had teased him that he'd started breaking things on purpose, just to give himself a reason to get out his tools. It wasn't true, of course, but he had begun to feel a little crazy, having stayed in town so long. He missed the sense of scale at Thorndyke, the far shape of the ranges, the open views across the lake. He missed the ancient thrill of being dwarfed by nature, while at the same time feeling his dominion over it. He hadn't lied when he'd told the local rag that Thorndyke was the best place he'd ever lived. When Jill's dad died and they inherited the property, they'd sold their sprawling family home in the Wairapa and given most of the proceeds to the kids to help with their down payments, and in Rachel's case, to blow on a 1920s-themed vineyard wedding that he still couldn't hear mentioned without rolling his eyes at the expense. The plan had been to subdivide, carving up the fields beside the road, but keeping the original farmhouse, which Jill couldn't bear to part with, for themselves. He'd dragged his heels at first. Who didn't feel exhausted by the thought of moving house? But he reckoned now that he loved the place as much as she did. Before the landslide, he used to fly to Wellington several times a month for work, and to Auckland too, when he couldn't avoid it. Descending into Queenstown Airport and thinking ahead to the long drive home over the ranges had become one of the great joys of his late middle age, suffusing him with a deep sense of presence and arrival. Perhaps because of this, the closure of the past had felt strangely personal to him, and strangely debilitating, as if a crucial pathway in his mind had been peremptorily shut off. His train of thought must have been following the conversation unconsciously, for he came out of his reverie to hear Kathy say, "So I guess you'll wait until the pass has opened up again." Lady Darvish hesitated, meeting his eye, and in the brief pause before either of them spoke, Mark said,
"That's not going to happen anytime soon."
He shook his head, exhaling heavily.
"Look at Kaikoura. Look at the recovery there. And Christchurch, where are we at? What, 6 years on? Nah."
"The land will hold its value, though," Kathy said. "Those gorgeous views, and so close to the lake. You won't have any trouble selling it."
"Down the line, maybe," Mark said. "But try and get construction crews in there right now. Where are they going to stay? And the supply routes? Where's the nearest town? Omarama? Nah. It's a cul-de-sac. No one's going to touch that job until the pass has opened up again, and that'll be years. 3 years, I bet you. Maybe four."
"At least you're not in any rush," said Kathy consolingly.
"Well, you don't have a choice now," said Mark. "Do you? A few months later, and you'd have been sweet. They'd have sold like hotcakes, and then it'd be someone else's problem, wouldn't it? Nah, that's just bad luck. Bad bloody luck, mate."
Sir Owen was growing irritated, and he could tell from the way that his wife was turning her rings around her fingers that she was trying to restrain herself from saying something she'd regret. It had been clear from the moment the Malloys had got there that Mark begrudged him his good news. Kathy had been all right, a bit insincere maybe, but she'd gone through the motions at least. Mark hadn't said congratulations, hadn't asked any questions, hadn't mentioned that he'd seen the headlines, which of course he had. And he'd put the framed photograph aside, not propped upright, respectfully, on the back shelf, tidy out of the way, but in the middle of the table, on its back. Sir Owen didn't give a shit, didn't care about the photograph, didn't need congratulations, didn't need anything at all from anyone. But it pissed him off that Mark was calling him unlucky. There's busting balls, he thought, and there's savoring another man's misfortune.
I guess it just goes to show, said Kathy inanely.
And Lady Davish smiled down at her rings. Because it wasn't a misfortune. The farm had sold, or was about to, just as soon as the conveyancing was done. They had taken down the listing not because of the landslide, not because of any stroke of bad luck, but because the buyer had made absolute secrecy a condition of the sale. Lemoyne had offered double what they'd hoped for, maybe more than double, when you factored in the side project with Autonomo, which Sir Owen had negotiated, rather cleverly he thought, as part of the sale and purchase agreement, and which had already paid dividends in the form of exposure and PR. The deposit had been paid, so even if the sale fell through, and there was no reason to think it would, even then they would still be sitting pretty. They were high on the hog, richer than they'd ever been, millionaires a few times over, but they were bound by a non-disclosure agreement not to say so. Not, at least, until Lemoyne had put the bunker in.
So you're going to wait then, said Mark. Park the subdivision, stay up here, just wait it out.
He was addressing Sir Owen, but it was Lady Davish, she replied.
Actually, she said in a breezy voice, we sold it.
Sir Owen gaped at her in shock.
Jill.
Oh, come on, she said. Who are they going to tell?
Jill,
he said again, and shook his head.
Don't.
Owen, these are our friends, she said. Our oldest friends. It's not like we're going to the media. This isn't a press release. Relax.
He recognized that breezy, almost sing-song voice from when they argued. It sounded innocent, but it meant that she was out for blood. He put up his hands.
Well, this wasn't me, he said. Let the record show I kept my mouth shut. I was a good boy.
But suddenly he felt like laughing, for the truth was he'd been on the verge of telling them himself. Another crack from Mark was all it would have taken. He knew it. Maybe she did too.
They can keep a secret, said Lady Davish, still in the same voice. I mean, for heaven's sake.
Well, this is awfully mysterious, said Kathy.
Mark was frowning.
So what's the secret? He said. You sold the farm?
All this melodrama, said Lady Davish. It's ridiculous, really. Yes, we've had an offer from someone who's seen a few too many James Bond movies in his life, let's put it that way.
You can't say who it is?
Lady Davish hesitated.
Maybe we shouldn't.
She looked queringly at Sir Owen, who just shrugged, masking a smile.
Developer,
said Mark.
No, it's for a private dwelling. But he wants the whole tract, all of it, the whole subdivision. He offered on the house as well, didn't he, Owen? But we said absolutely not.
Kiwi? Said Mark.
He's American, said Lady Davish. A billionaire.
Kathy gasped.
I know, said Lady Davish. A billionaire next door.
I hope you absolutely rinsed him then, said Mark to Sir Owen. Oh, yes, he said, enjoying himself. We got a very good price. He didn't want a discount because of the landslide. The opposite, actually. It was a draw card, wasn't it, Jill?
That's just what I mean, she said. The James Bond thing. He wanted somewhere that was easily defended. He actually used those words, easily defended.
Oh, go on, said Kathy. Just say his name. We won't know him anyway.
Well, you didn't hear it from us, said Lady Davish.
You didn't hear anything from us, said Sir Owen.
His name is Robert Lemoyne, said Lady Davish.
Robert Lemoyne, said Kathy.
Remember that helicopter crash in Florida? Said Sir Owen. Big story. Everyone on board was killed a few years ago. That was his wife.
Kazarian, said Lady Darvish.
Yeah, Gisela Kazarian, a model. She was only young.
Have you heard of him? Said Lady Darvish.
No,
said Kathy. She looked at Mark, who shook his head very slightly.
So why is it a secret? She said. I don't understand.
Well, said Lady Darvish, I guess when you've got that kind of money...
Kidnapping, said Sir Owen, cutting her off. That's what they're all afraid of, and extortion. They're all paranoid as hell. Security is through the roof. Everything they do, everywhere they go, plans, flights, holidays, the most innocent thing, it's all top secret.
It's also just ego, said Lady Darvish. I mean, that's what it comes down to, swearing us to secrecy. That's just to feed his ego. That's the real reason, Owen, you know it is.
Yeah, Sir Owen said. All right, Jill, but his wife did die.
But how can it be a secret? Kathy said. Property, that's public record.
Shell company, Sir Owen said. Owned by a trust, owned by another company, and back and back and back. You'd have to do a lot of digging if you wanted any names. So he could just be blowing smoke, Mark said.
Sir Owen smiled.
No, he said. It's a genuine offer.
And he's paid the deposit, said Lady Darvish. He's not going to walk. I mean, he could. He wouldn't miss the money.
But defended from what? Said Kathy. Easily defended from what?
It's just a fantasy, Sir Owen said. It's what they all crave, isn't it? These billionaires. They all want it to be just like Game of Thrones, or just like bloody...
He couldn't think of a second example.
Well, it's also because of what he wants to build, said Lady Darvish.
That's the other reason, right? He doesn't want anybody to see what he's...
They're all doing it, Sir Owen said, turning to their guests. They're all putting them in these...
Have you seen them? Said Lady Darvish, now addressing the Malloys as well. These mega... And they can withstand anything, absolutely anything. They call it submarine function.
Any kind of bomb, Sir Owen said, nodding. Flood, fire, extreme weather, anything.
But inside they're like hotels. They have everything, all underground, and it's crazy what they... I mean, some of them even have a garage with a car lift, a swimming pool,
gun range,
bowling alley, movie theatre,
crops, said Sir Owen. Under heat lamps, underground.
Yes, and they have their own power and water and air and everything, totally self-contained. They're kind of incredible, actually.
Doomsteading, said Sir Owen. That's what they call it. Bunking down for the end of the world. They're doomsteaders, that's the word.
And this is just what you can find on Google, Lady Darvish said. I mean, it's not like we've actually... This is just your standard off-the-shelf type of...
Bloody high shelf, said Sir Owen, laughing. The cheapest one is 3.5 million.
Really? Said Lady Darvish. You should Google them. Google luxury bunker.
For the ultra rich, Sir Owen added.
They were both nodding.
Look at the floor plans. Even just the floor plans. They'll blow your mind.
Now it was the Malloys who exchanged a glance. The look that passed between them lasted barely a second before Mark dropped his eyes back to his plate. But Sir Owen had caught it, and he felt stung. It was the kind of glance that confirmed a shared opinion and promised to revive it on the car ride home. What was it that they had noticed? Something they had seen before? Something they'd discussed in private? Some pet theory they'd formed and developed over time? Or something that surprised them? Something new and disappointing? Some proof that he and Jill had changed? Embarrassed, he looked across at his wife, but she was draining the last of her champagne. I don't know, said Kathy. I guess it just makes me kind of sad. There was a little pause. That's not like our view is going to change, said Lady Darvish. Best of all worlds, really. And it's not like he's going to be living there full time.
How'd he make his money? Said Mark. Aviation technology, said Sir Owen. Drones.
Wow, said Kathy.
Sir Owen waited for them to make the connection to Autonomo and his conservation project, but neither of them did. Maybe they hadn't read the news reports about him after all. He felt a little spike of indignation, which he was damned if he was going to let them see. To cover it, he picked up the bottle to make another round of refills, suddenly wishing very much that they would both drink the hell up and go home.
Anyway, said Lady Darvish, sitting back, it's been a crazy last few months. The whole thing is just, I mean, with him making this incredible offer way above, and how it's all played out, and keeping everything a secret, it's all just, he's very, how would you describe him, Owen?
He thinks he's God's gift to all mankind, said Sir Owen shortly. He's American.
And before Lady Darvish could agree with him, he turned to Kathy and asked about her job. Sir Owen Darvish had never felt more acutely conscious of his nationality than he did when he was with Lemoyne. And in the brief time that he had known the billionaire, he had experienced two quite different forms of patriotic feeling. He was intensely proud of their association and felt he had fulfilled a lofty duty to his country, not just in having courted foreign wealth, but in proving, in being proof, that New Zealanders could hold their own among the world's elite. To have secured not just Lemoyne's business, but also his approval and his respect, was, in Sir Owen's mind, a matter of high national service. And in fond moments, when he was in the shower or on the verge of sleep, he expressed deep gratitude towards himself from an imagined common point of view. At the same time, however, he wanted desperately to see the man cut down to size, and in this he felt even more acutely Kiwi. He was long accustomed to regarding his country as an automatic underdog, as a righteous, plucky, decent, and fundamentally good-natured contender, unfairly disadvantaged in any instance of unflattering international comparison by its small population, its short history, and its geographical remoteness from the great power centres of the world. A habit of defensive self-exception masked a deep fear of his nation's insignificance, and a deep anxiety that at the end of the day, poetic justice might not in fact be served. And although this was largely a subconscious attitude, he did register in himself a genuine discomfort whenever New Zealand was held to any international standard that afforded no handicap for scale. All of this lent itself quite naturally to an anti-American sentiment. And as he could not help but view Lemoyne's colossal wealth and confidence in metonymic terms, he'd felt, ever since he'd met the man, an almost moral longing to defeat him. When he and Jill were alone, they often spoke about the billionaire in tones that bordered on contempt, a contempt made all the more bitter by the knowledge that Lemoyne probably never spoke of them to anyone at all. The Molloys didn't stay much longer, and later, as he was stacking the dishwasher and Lady Darvish was boxing up the leftovers for lunch, he said,
"So, our big news fell a bit flat."
"Well," she said, not looking at him, "it's money, isn't it? People are always weird about other people's money."
"Yeah,"
he said. She still wasn't looking at him. "Mark's looking very heavy," she said. "He gets such a red face. I wonder if he takes Viagra."
"What? Why?"
"It's a side effect, the red face and slightly blurry eyes."
"Excuse me," Sir Owen said. "What do you know about these side effects of Viagra?"
"It's common knowledge."
"Not to me."
"Well, now it is," said Lady Darvish crisply. She swept the crumbs from the breadboard into the bin, and it occurred to Sir Owen that they might be having an argument.
"What's wrong?" he said.
"I'm just so pissed off that I told them," she said. "I can't believe that I told them."
"Oh," he said, relieved. "I'm sure it's fine."
"But why would they keep the secret, right? I mean, they don't owe him anything. They haven't signed anything. They're not waiting on conveyancing. What do they care?"
"It's like you said. Who are they going to tell?"
"It's all so silly anyway," said Lady Darvish, clicking the Tupperware lid shut with unnecessary force. "Keep the secret. It's so juvenile."
"They don't know anyone, Jill. Who are their friends? There's us. Who else? No one. It's fine."
"Usually it's you who has no self-control," she said.
"I know," he said. "Who do you know who takes Viagra?"
"Well, nobody for sure," she said. "I just have my suspicions."
"Oh, your suspicions?"
"Yes, based on the side effects."
Oh, the side effects, I see. Because the actual effect, you wouldn't know anything about that.
No, big man, she said, smiling at last and allowing him to pull her close against him. I wouldn't know anything about that. They went to bed, and in the morning he took the Audi in for servicing, swapped the LPG tank, cleared out the gutters, and sharpened all their kitchen knives. A former neighbour from their Wairarapa days dropped by in the late afternoon, and in the evening he and Jill went for a swim and a sauna and ordered takeaway Chinese. By Monday morning he had forgotten all about their dinner party, and he arrived at the head office of Darvish Pest Control in good spirits, eager to begin the week. He found a gift from his secretary on the desk. She had updated his business cards to read Sir Owen Darvish, KNZM, and he had just sat down and was turning the card admiringly so that the blue ink turned silver in the light when his computer pinged, and he looked up to see an email in his inbox with the subject heading Request for Interview, R.E. Robert Lemoyne. He reached out and tapped it open. Dear Mr. Darvish, it began incorrectly. I am a freelance journalist currently working on a long-term investigative piece about the practice of doomsteading among the super rich. I would like to ask you a few questions about your association with Robert Lemoyne, specifically in relation to your property in Thorndyke. Could we arrange a time to speak? This could be off the record if you prefer. Yours sincerely, and then a name Sir Owen didn't recognize, and a phone number. Heart sinking, he forwarded it to Lady Darvish with the message, What do you make of this? And then sat rereading the email and anxiously tapping the edge of his business card against the desk. Barely 20 seconds passed before his phone rang. He picked up. Shit, said Lady Darvish.
What do you think? He said. Was it Mark?
No idea, she said. Shit.
Pretty damn quick if it was.
Shit, she said again.
It could have been someone else, he said. One of the lawyers or a neighbour who saw something, or someone we don't even know.
She made a doubtful noise. Could you just ask him?
Who? Mark?
No, this journalist. Ask him how he found out.
You mean actually talk to him?
Well, he does say it could be off the record.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything. That's just something they say, right? I mean, who is this guy?
He could hear her tapping keys in the background. Hang on, she said. I'm just looking him up. Okay, he's not with a major paper or TV.
He said that. He said he was freelance.
What's the address? Gallows Humour. Is that like the name of a magazine?
I think it's just a joke.
All right, so maybe he's nobody, Lady Darvish said, still tapping. Anthony Gallo. Yeah, I'm on his website. He looks pretty small-time. I mean, there are some blogs and things, but nothing. Sir Owen opened his browser on his computer.
Do a search for him and Mark, he said, and him and Kathy, and him and the kids.
They were quiet for a moment as they both searched. No, said Lady Darvish presently. No connection.
Try Facebook.
I did, he's not on.
What if I just forward it to Robert? Said Sir Owen. I could forward it right now and say that I have no idea who this guy is or how he found out, which is true.
No, she said, don't, just in case.
What then? Should I just ignore it? Pretend-
Call him, said Lady Darvish. Just remember the first rule of PR.
What's that? Smile.
It's also the last rule of PR. He made a noise of impatience.
What is it, Jill?
Say nothing.